Blockbuster Blake Stubbs is on the line. Blake, welcome to WGN.
Well, thank you for having me, as always. It's good to be back, especially in the middle of the night. It's some of the best time to talk movies.
That's
not a joke. It really is the best time to talk movies.
Back when you were Hollywood Blake Stubbs, you know, you at least had, yeah. Where I would do the math. I'm like, well, it's 3 a.m. here, but it's only 1 a.m. out in California, so it wasn't so bad. Well, now it is officially just as bad as it really is.
Right, because he's here in the Central Time Zone.
Yeah, you're down in, I think, Springfield or something. So here's the thing. The movies that are out there now are all around the country in the theaters, some of the biggest ones now. And there has been kind of, we talked about it before we actually got on the air with the previous show, is that this is one of those where it is getting kind of mixed reviews. We're getting, at least from people who are seeing it. I'm not sure from the reviewing community how it's gone. You'll fill us in on that. But some people are kind of liking this new DC Justice League movie, and then some are like, not liking it.
Yeah. Well, from the critical standpoint, there's a bit of a stink with this one. So Rotten Tomatoes, which every moviegoer in this country knows, is sort of the basic metric. You know, it kind of gives a sense of, is this movie good or is this movie bad? Because it's based on an aggregate of critical reviews. And they did not release the tomato meter score up until the day that this came out in theaters. And usually that's not the case. Usually this can come out, that number will come out a couple of days early and people already have a good sense. There was not so much an embargo on critical reviews. You could go out and find your favorite critic and read them. But to get a sense of what the pool of critics were saying, you had to wait until the day of. And the number was quite low the day it came out. I believe it was at about a 48%. And when I last checked, it was at about a 40. Not a critical favorite, Justice League, which has been somewhat par for the course, save for Wonder Woman with the DC Universe films.
Well, the person that we talked to before we came on the air who had seen it, his critique of it wasn't necessarily, you know, because some people are coming down on some of these movies because they aren't the Marvel movies, right? So they're just, you try to compare them both, I guess it's impossible not to, and people just happen to love the other ones, and if it's not that, well, then it must not be nearly as good. But he came down on something that usually is seen as kind of a hallmark on the positive side for these movies. He said the special effects, and I guess we've jumped the shark on those, he said it was too special effects-y. Is that possible?
I think it is, especially when you have certain things that get rushed. And if you follow the production timeline for Justice League, the word that I used in a previous discussion for, I believe, WGN Plus, at least, you'll hear a little bit more in-depth about this movie, and goes on for quite a while, the word is embattled. This production was directed originally by Zack Snyder, who did Man of Steel, Batman vs. Superman, Dawn of Justice. He's also adapted other properties such as 300. He did Watchmen. Zack Snyder was at the helm, and tragedy struck his family when his daughter, very, very sad story, took her own life. And so he stepped back and removed himself from the director's chair and his producer responsibilities. And then Joss Whedon, who, as you mentioned before, people sort of compare these to Marvel movies. Many will know specifically from giving us the first and second Avengers films. He stepped in and sort of took over the director's chair. There were massive reshoots. Henry Cavill came in, and to get to the special effects element, Henry Cavill, who plays Superman, was already knee-deep in filming another movie where he grew a very large mustache. And if you don't know the story, they had to digitally remove facial hair from Superman, who, by the way, none of us should have known was in the movie, but because this was a big story, it was spoiled very early on. So, yeah, and it doesn't, to the trained eye, it's a very big giveaway. And I think that that's just one small thing. But, yeah, this movie relies very heavily on CGI effects.
Wait a minute.
Sometimes to its detriment.
Blake, have we become too complacent where we won't even bother shaving our mustache? You know, well, let's fix it in post.
Well,
come on.
See, yeah, that was actually a big, I get to use this word, I'm so happy. It was quite the kerfuffle because his agreement to be available to do reshoots was totally okay. like, to find the time for him to do it. The problem was the character he was playing had to have very specific facial hair, and the studio that was in charge of that said, look, we will give you Henry Cavill, but he can't shave. That is the one caveat. And so they said, well, we'll just remove it digitally. But then if you follow the timeline of when that happened, that was within this calendar year, and usually a movie of this caliber is done well in advance. So there were special effects that were, by some measure, rushed. And audiences with trained eyes are seeing them, and they're not too happy about it.
What the? That's like the craziest. That's like the most unnecessary way to screw up a movie is the mustache on the reshoots. You know, that the fact that we're talking about it, and that it's enough of a deal that you noticed it and other trained eyes. And then, right? It's just like you think you can get that right, you know. But, I know we've got some friends that work in the special effects industry. And for some of the, I remember when he had some things to do or they had some things rushed as far as project-wise, and they were trying to get through some of the either Fantastic Four or the X-Men movies. And some of the things were rushed, and you could sort of tell, right, that the quality was a little different.
Yeah, and especially in this case, what I think was the biggest detriment is not the fact that, you know, the actor playing this character had facial hair and they digitally removed it, and some people say he has this, like, Botox lip, or others are saying it's this poorly, you know, computer-generated lip. The problem is that this Superman being a part of this film is a very big spoiler. And it was not something that was, you were not seeing him in trailers up until the final month when, you know, Cat was out of the bag, so we might as well show him. But it was supposed to be a big reveal, a big unveiling, a big is he or isn't he. And the fact that there was a mustache gate, so to speak, made us aware. And I think that to a lot of audiences, that sort of tainted this film. And, of course, there were other elements like, you know, new director changing seats halfway through production. Actually, it was more than halfway through production. And I read that somewhere Joss Whedon had about a 15 to 20% reshoot rate for what you see in this film. So post-production on all of that stuff was very quick and rushed.
You know what?
And it's not always clear what was and wasn't.
Yeah, well, we're going to get into it in just a second. I know my family got a chance to see it this without me. I was here doing stuff. I was actually doing the live show, but they saw it, and they really liked it. They described it as, quote-unquote, pretty awesome, and they really enjoyed it. And so maybe the expectations are a little bit different, especially after I think we have different thoughts on what can be done and how to approach these based on the success of Wonder Woman. WGN live here in the Allstate Showcase studio until 5 a.m. It is Dane Neal in for Nick DiGilio. Dino Tiberi is with us as well. To my right, Casera in the studio and on the line as we talk movies with one of my favorite movie review personalities. What would you say? I know you call yourself maybe you're like a talking head, but you're doing so much more. In fact, we're going to be talking head transplants later. So maybe that's appropriate, right? But Blockbuster Blake Stubbs calling us from... Now, are you in Springfield right now? I know you're in the kind of the middle region of Illinois. No, he's not in Peoria.
Definitely in Central Illinois. I'm a Peoria boy, but I'm like from Peoria, but I'm actually in Champaign. So Champaign or Bend.
U of I. Yeah. That's right.
He's in Champaign. Yeah, he's moving around wherever the movies take him. Right, that's where you'll find Blake Stubbs, and people are heading to these movies, and you know, here's the thing too, and for the DC folks that are getting some of these bad tomato scores, and some of the, you know, lip gate, right? I mean, just think about this. This is not what you wanted, especially when you had the momentum from Wonder Woman. People thought they had turned a corner, right? You were able to build in some of the humor, right, that you've got from the Marvels. You were building in some of these characters, and people start, you know, because you have, I think, the blueprints for success. You've got, you know, these are A-list superheroes, right? These are people everybody grew up with and that have a great... and then on the Batman side, you've got, you know, a character that has been in some of the biggest and kind of iconic movies in the genre. And so to have them kind of get together, there was high hopes. the family thought it was pretty good. I'm not sure maybe what they were watching. They certainly didn't know. No one said anything like, but with the lip? You know, they didn't say anything about Lipgate.
Right.
But were there things? Because also, too, is, you know, when the previous show, they described it, they mentioned a lot of positive things. They said Gal Gadot, that she was great. You know, they mentioned, you know, some of the other characters that they really liked. But ultimately, they just didn't like the film.
I was going to say, that's really the camp that I fall in. I trust me, I want these to be good, and I want to enjoy these films because they're huge, and they are providing us something, you know, fans, comic book fans, or even just, you know, comic book film fans, you know, the type of environment we want to be in where the best of the best are on screen together, and there's hopefully a great story, you know, to bring them together, to put them on screen and let the spectacle unfold. The thing that I know I'm unflinching about with all of the DC universes, I'm very big on who they have cast in each one of these roles. Henry Cavill as Superman was the first one we really got for this big kickoff. You know, Gal Gadot is Wonder Woman, and I don't want anybody to think that anyone can take that away from her. She's perfect. The Jason Momoa as Aquaman is quite good. What we get of him. Ray Fisher as Cyborg is also, I think, one of the more under, you know, in all the discussions I'm hearing and reading and everything, he's being less talked about. But I'm a big fan of his work. And then the other thing is, you know, Ben Affleck as Bruce Wayne and Batman. I was big about it, even with Dawn of Justice, you know, being a big miss of a film. But I love Batfleck, and I want more Batfleck. And I think that he is bringing something to the character for their rendition of Batman that is fresh and interesting.
What is it about Ben Affleck that he's like the Bennifer? He's Batfleck.
Yeah.
Right. He's like, he lends himself to these combo nickname things.
It's one of those things where I don't know how to look. As long as the internet's going to be out there to turn something into a meme, I don't think this guy's ever going to have it easy. That's the best way I can describe it. There's always going to be a way to turn it into something. But Batfleck, when somebody unveiled that, I was like, all right, I'm good. He has to prove himself. And then he did, so now Batfleck is a good thing, in my book, at least.
We've got to take a break in just a minute, and then we've got to send it to news. When we come back, we're going to have a lot more Blake Stubbs. Blake, I would love to get into a little bit, because anytime you enter, you introduce a new character into some of these movies, you have all of those purists out there that are thinking, like, hey, this is done right, or this isn't done right, or this should be done differently, you know, whether it's, you know, for Guardians of the Galaxy, like Yondu with the Finn, you know, right. There's a lot of ways that people anticipate their character kind of being brought to the big screen in this new incarnation. And so you've got Cyborg, who's kind of been on the second string. He's been like the minor leagues, right, of superheroes. Right. Then you got Aquaman, who, I mean, Aquaman was, he's not really a frontline guy, because, you know, he always had kind of limited power, you know, because they always had him in the cartoon for Super Friends.
Right.
He was always running around, but it was only like a rare occasion when he could, like, do the whole, you know, kind of the radar range to the dolphins, you know, and then have it really matter. They did a lot of on land crime fighting back then. So, but I think people are probably excited to see those guys come to the forefront.
Absolutely. And especially, you know, with fresh faces and really good energy. As far as Aquaman goes, I don't know of anyone who is unhappy with Jason Momoa as this character and what they've done, you know, in bringing it to the big screen. And this is our first introduction. So if we're going to talk a little more about it, we're going to need to open up a fresh conversation, because this is actually one of the biggest positives, I think, about Justice League.
Yep, we're going to talk about that. Plus, we'll talk about maybe the ability for each one of these movies, because I think that's where that whole Marvel blueprint, where they have these guys together, and then they can all do their own individual kind of franchises as well. So we'll talk about that in just a bit. WGN live, Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue. The Nick DiGilio Show. Danielle in until 5. And the nephew of Larry from Aurora, Dino Tavari, to my right, as well, Cassara in the booth on the line with us, talking Nick's one of his favorite topics is movies, of course. And we are talking with one of our favorite guys, Blockbuster Blake Stubbs, kind of breaking down, you know, just the, I guess the difficulties, some of the good side, the upside, some of the downside, and the pitfalls of trying to make a blockbuster superhero movie these days. And the DC folks, they thought they had it dialed in. It looks as though they didn't. They let the mustache and some other things get away from them. But there's still so many cool characters out there that people know and love and are excited to see. And so before we went to the break, we were talking about Aquaman. And it's neat to have kind of Aquaman come in, and we all remember, I remember him as, you know, watching the cartoon, The Super Friends, and Aquaman had usually, if I remember correctly, and I'm closing my eyes right now, he had like a yellow skin tight kind of workout shirt with some scales, and he had green leggings, and I think didn't he have little like wings or flippers on his ankles? I can't remember exactly. Blake, am I right?
Yeah, and I know that he had green pants that were very scaly and like an orange top and blonde hair, but like, you know, a lot of people, Robot Chicken specifically used to very much riff on him, you know, how useless he was outside of anything, you know, wet. And that was basically it.
Yeah. So bringing him into the movie here, through the trailers, where I've got to see a totally different kind of look. And, yeah, he looks kind of cool. Dino's holding up a picture where he's kind of in action. And he looks okay with his orange top or blouse, as you would say, Blake. But this one looks kind of, it kind of has sort of a, like an ancient kind of Poseidon-y kind of feel to it, right? He looks way scarier than the Aquaman we grew up with.
He does, there's sort of a, that's the design aesthetic that they went for with the Atlanteans, but the thing about this Arthur Curry character, this Aquaman, is that he is considered much younger than his contemporaries in Atlantis. So his, like, bad boy demeanor, you know, by their standards, is more, you know, laid back and cool, and he doesn't really fit in with them, and so that's why I think, you know, Momoa is bringing an energy to this that makes it fresh, that makes it fun, and I feel like he's the kind of actor, especially when you watch interviews with him and you see, you know, how excited he is to be playing this part. I don't think there's any other way this guy could play this part. And I think that it is, you know, one positive note that I would disagree with anybody who says otherwise about Justice League. This is a good thing. This actor playing this part is good. And I'm eager to see where it goes from here, much like when they introduced us to Gal Gadot's Wonder Woman, and she instantly won everyone over in a film that wasn't seen very, you know, positively, critically or by fan reaction. But then she got her own movie, and it was very well received and is a very great film to watch in a big theater with a crowd or at home.
I know that we're thinking, I'm sure lots of fans out there are looking forward to the next Wonder Woman movie, like independent kind of feature film where she is highlighted. Is there, whether it's Cyborg or whether it is, you know, Aquaman, did they lay the groundwork for that kind of film coming up? Because in my mind, I'm thinking, you know, what's as useless as Aquaman may have been in many crime fighting situations, you know, you'd have to maybe what go kind of backstory retro, like a young, you know, Aquaman growing up and then kind of, like you said, finding his way and deciding he was going to break out on his own, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I think that Aquaman, at least, we get a nice glimpse of his standing with Atlantis, you know, him sort of claiming a birthright, and where we're going to see that develop and go. This film doesn't necessarily want to give us too much of that. It just gives us enough of the character, and we get to know him throughout the film. In the case of Cyborg, there are still a lot of questions, and I think that there's at least enough intrigue there to say, okay, this is a guy who, you know, is getting used to what abilities he has and is trying to have battle an existential crisis of, but I died, but I didn't, back and forth, and his usefulness and what he wants to do with the gifts that he's given. And then, of course, you have Wonder Woman, who now is sort of battling this idea of leading and being a very public sort of figure, as opposed to this live in the shadows, sort of save people when she can and, you know, never ignore her gifts and ability to use them. But at the same time, you know, she can be something bigger. And then, you know, of course, you have Batman, you know, Ben Affleck. We still don't have a standalone Batman film. So I think for this iteration of Batman, there's still a lot of question of whether or not Ben Affleck's going to play the part. And that's, you know, not been confirmed 100% one way or another. But then you also have Ezra Miller, you know, who's playing the Flash. And we have a Flash on television played by Grant Gustin, who is widely acclaimed for his work. But when you step into the big screen world, they wanted to have a fresh take to fit this dynamic. And so Ezra Miller, who's a very talented young actor, is giving us sort of a very idiosyncratic Barry Allen that is just very comic relief to some of the more serious angles that the DC Universe has tackled. And I'm sort of really intrigued to see where that property goes more than any, because that's such a, okay, really, we've seen very, very little, if at all, any of this character prior to. I think he makes a bit of a, not to steal one from Aquaman, but I think he makes a bit of a positive splash. And I think that, you know, again, there's things that are positive that can be built off of, but this film sort of feels like it's rushed. They're giving you the team-up movie after only two prior films, as opposed to the case with its contemporary across the street, you know, the Marvel Cinematic Universe, which gave us several, and we knew who every character was prior to their introduction.
Right. Yeah.
Save for a couple that were introduced with very specific purposes. It's a different way of handling it, and I think that it's a harder sell for DC. And I think that's a big reason why it's not performing as well as one would have hoped.
The comparison on the Flash character, at least the people that have seen it, they kind of compared it to kind of the younger, more comic Spider-Man version that we've got in Marvel today. So, you know, yeah. And then so that's kind of he's kind of like that, right? Kind of like a young, quirky character.
Yes, who has a hard time being social. And is very much into proving his father's innocence, although that, by the end of the film, you know, still feels kind of like a second thing. You know what I mean? Like, we didn't really get a full explanation of who he is and why he is. We just got who he is. And we had to take it for what it was. So, I'm eager to see where they go with it. I know that film is going to be quite a ways off. I think it was supposed to be out this next year, but it's been delayed. So maybe it's because they're going back to the drawing board and making sure that whatever they put out in these individual properties going forward, given what transpired with trying to get this film made and out there for its release date, that they right all whatever wrongs, you know, that need or address concerns that need to be addressed.
Yeah, you got to get these things right. I mean, if you know the common average eyes be able to pick these things off in the movies, I think the next one, they're going to learn from their mistakes, hopefully, and get that one right.
Like you just say, like, everybody shave. Let's do that. Well, here's the thing, too, and let's use our predictive powers, is because when you're bringing this up, and of course, the way that he's been portrayed in the past, Aquaman is limited. I can't even imagine, like, his standalone film. The only thing I can think of as far as the premise of the film is that there's maybe there's a leak, you know, Exxon Valdez kind of situation, and Aquaman,
yeah,
you know, jumps in there, or you have, you know, underground pipeline or something. Maybe you have like a crack in the crust of the earth, and he needs to, like, you know, something like that. The Guppy years.
Guppy years, sure, yeah.
From the 219, yeah. You're going to go back, right, and you're going to talk about how...
Right.
You know, you just go a little, what was the name of that one, that Nemo, Finding Nemo. That was a great movie. I think
Finding Nemo. Some
cues from there.
Do you take, you know, maybe as a young lad, he's communicating with a dolphin or something? Is that, where do we start here? That seems a...
And power-wise, Dino, I'm glad you brought it up. Is that what, does he just have that same ability to get fish to do what he wants him to, or does he have some other skills?
Well, that really doesn't play in Justice League. It's really all about, you know, how skilled of a fighter he is. Yes, water is something he has control over, but his ability to be sort of like a demigod, which you know is sort of an established thing that Wonder Woman is as an Amazon, he kind of fits that role as opposed to just, oh well, you know, if there isn't water around, he's kind of useless. He holds his own. He fights, you know, very well, and it's one of those things where I was going to say that is another plus. They didn't necessarily just give us an Aquaman tease. They gave us an Aquaman who is a warrior, who is able to, you know, hold his own. And while he may not be able to, you know, knock out Superman with one punch, he can hold his own. He can fight. And he's got a demeanor and a cool factor, especially given that new look, that I think will draw audiences to the theaters.
Yeah.
And, you know, despite the foibles of Justice League, I don't think Jason Momoa's property as Aquaman, you know, being that front man, is going to be, you know, problematic. I think he's going to have an okay transition.
Yeah, you hope that they'll be able to, just like Iron Man kind of hit on and became like this huge hit all by itself, that they'll hit on one of these. Maybe they've done that already with Wonder Woman. I think that they have. Maybe they'll find one or two more. Blake, when we come back, we're going to take a break. We've got to check the weather and all that. When we come back, we're going to get into the... We found out DC, all the things they're doing wrong. Some great stuff happening on the Marvel side that people are kind of universally enjoying. Wow. 720 WGN, live here in the Allstate Showcase studio. Nick DiGilio Show, Daniel in until 5, along with Dino Tiberi, Casera in the booth on the line. And this is, Casera, this is like legitimate, bona fide superhero type music, right?
Yeah, it is. It's actually from the Justice League.
See, look at that. So you got the soundtrack. Anything, any problems you may have, Blake, with the soundtrack?
No. I know that, you know, it felt like it was in line with what we got in Batman, Superman, Dawn of Justice. It felt like it was, I mean, this is Danny Elfman. So, you know, Danny Elfman never phones it in. That man's one of the greats. So, yeah, I'm glad that it's back. I did just read an interesting article, though, if you want to talk about movie music, where he's not too happy that, you know, some of the great, you know, superhero style themes, you know, things that we would hum when the movies would come on, that's kind of been abandoned. I mean, think about it. He did Batman. You know, he did, and then you had John Williams do Superman. You know, those are scores that people remember. The music in this is not bad, but it's definitely not the most, you know, trumpeting or memorable thing by the end of the film. You're more focused on the spectacle and the visuals and everything else.
Yeah, Danny Elfman, the connection, Dane, my sister.
You're related to Danny Elfman?
No, I actually know, my sister actually knows Danny Elfman. He has a violinist that my sister has been involved with representing over the years, and so there's a connection there with them. He's come a long way since Oingo Boingo, I know that.
Some would disagree.
But that's great, though, that he's able to do the themes for those. He's a very talented man.
Yeah, you hit on it, Blake, and Dino, too, is that, like, he has made that transition from, you know, what they were kind of like a crazy, fun punk band, right, with music that was important, and he's turned into kind of the modern-day John Williams, right, where he's there just, you know, responsible for so many iconic soundtracks that really make those movies. Here's a little bit of the differences as we get into some of the Marvel films that, and you have just a totally different philosophy. You've got these big, you know, orchestral, you know, kind of scores put together that are big, kind of gladiator-esque, as opposed to, you know, Guardians, which just takes kind of really interesting and fun musical choices that kind of brings that into it, and they're such big parts of kind of the feel of those movies.
Yeah, and definitely, especially, you know, when you take, and again, I mentioned Batman, but Danny Elfman also did the Sam Raimi Spider-Man films, which were also very, you know, big theme. You knew it was a Spider-Man theme when you heard it. But nowadays, things are a little bit different. They're more music that's set to suit the mood in the film. And if my memory serves, Danny Elfman was not the original composer for Justice League. It was actually, I believe, going to be a score done by Junkie XL. So this was something that, you know, was a change up as well. And I'm not going to say last minute, but it was a change that was made throughout the course of trying to make this big tentpole, biggest property DC's put out yet, because we're putting all our eggs in one basket film.
A lot of
what was said didn't actually happen. It's a different film than we were originally led to believe in a lot of respects.
It's the best laid plans, and it's tough to see it all thrown together here, especially with so much on the line, and again with the momentum of Wonder Woman. Well, on the Marvel side, you know, Ragnarok has been, you know, kind of universally embraced as far as those movies, the Thor movies, is very fun, irreverent, maybe almost a little bit too funny, right? Where maybe the jokes kind of overtook some of that whole, you know, galactic battle type movie that you expect from a Thor.
Absolutely. The one big thing I know from reading about Thor, the making of Thor, and how this Thor came to be, because yes, it is. It's vastly different from its two predecessors. And there's some differences in the Thor character, even from the Avengers films. The big thing was they wanted to reinvent this character. They wanted Thor to be fresh, and they didn't want Thor to be, you know, boring compared to his teammates, you know, Iron Man specifically. They wanted to give him new life, a new look, a new style, and in order to do that, they wanted to sort of take him a place he'd never been, have a visual style that was totally new, and, you know, put jokes in there, make it funny, show that, you know, he's not just this sort of stoic character. Because again, that's also part of his nature as a character, is that, you know, he's supposed to be this like fun loving, you know, character, you know, person from Asgard who has to earn his right as, you know, maybe their rightful king one day. And to give him a little more humanity, is not a bad thing. And Taika Waititi, who directed the film, who is a brilliant comedian in his own right and is actually in the film as a voice, the voice of Korg, one of the, you know, really hilarious parts of the film to his own credit, definitely came in with a different outlook. And I think that was also kicked off by Chris Hemsworth, you know, who's played Thor now multiple times. And he said, I want to make this different. I want to make it engaging and something new so that people don't just come in and expect the same thing.
Well, you know,
and to their credit, it worked.
Well, Chris Hemsworth, of course, I mean, he is all of those Thor-like things. You know, he's big, he's giant, he's handsome, he's very Thor-like, right? But he does have some comedic chops. We enjoyed him in Ghostbusters, right, when he did a little bit of that. And then they bring in some of these everyday situations that you just, it's that whole suspense of, you know, hey, you're slipping on another planet somewhere in this gladiator type situation, but yet he says, you know, we know each other, we're friends from work, right? It was like a normal thing,
right?
That we would just say, except, you know, not in that context. It's crazy.
It brought sort of like a new innocence to the character in a way, but it also just brought this whole like, okay, this is a totally different take than what we've seen in the past. And that is such a welcome change, especially, you know, if this is the third, you know, individual film that Thor as a character is going to have. It definitely, you know, brought new life to it, made it enjoyable. And yeah, I mean, this one I think is there's no question. This one's a hit, in just about every way. And I think, you know, from the standpoint of, you know, it maybe being, you know, too full of effects, I thought they did a pretty good job with it. It, you know, it didn't necessarily, I think, have the budget of an Avengers film, but it, no, it didn't. It was 180 million. The Avengers films run about 200 to 250. But this one definitely, you know, they cast some great actors to play these new parts, specifically Tessa Thompson, who I think can just be in everything. I'm a very big fan of her work. And, you know, we got Carl Urban joining the team, and he brings some comedy to the table, but also, you know, we get our first look at Mark Ruffalo as, you know, Bruce Banner in the Hulk since the Avengers Age of Ultron, and so it's sort of a team-up movie, you know, kind of like a buddy cop film in a way. And of course Tom Hiddleston, you know, everybody loves Tom Hiddleston as Loki, and he's back too. So, you know, this one, the one big thing I think that could be said about both Justice League and Thor Ragnarok is that the villains, you know, are maybe the difference makers here. You know, Steppenwolf, voiced by the great Kieran Hines in Justice League, no one cared about that villain in the theater I was in. Cate Blanchett got much more to work with in Thor Ragnarok as Hela, you know, the goddess of death. But again, you know, she's kind of a means to an end character to get to the next step in the Marvel phase plan. So she does a good job. It's a decent enough character for Thor to battle for sure. But at the same time, there's so much more going on in the movie, you know, that it's tying all of those ends together so that it's one giant, you know, big picture, not just one movie that you're sitting and watching, which is something that Marvel gets right and DC is still struggling with.
It's neat how they're able, you know, we have become so familiar with these characters that they can go ahead and kind of tweak them, and it sort of just seamlessly happens. You look at the Loki situation, it's kind of, you know, that whole, like, blood is thicker than water thing. We're able to accept that he's, like, good guy, bad guy, good guy, sort of bad guy, you know, crazy relative guy, you know, and you just kind of roll with it. And then he's still a big part and kind of one of those beloved figures. He's got some great humor and, you know, and funny sides going on in those movies as well.
Exactly. And, you know, the other thing is, too, we're much easier in terms of being, sorry, it's much more easier to be accustomed to the Marvel side of things, because this was the 17th, I believe, by my count, film in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. We've come through 17 films, and we know everybody, and the new faces are oftentimes introduced so well. You know, and coming up next, you know, I mean, I left Thor Ragnarok, after being, you know, hit with the big trailer for Black Panther, which comes out in February. And that movie, I think, is going to be absolutely outstanding just based on the fact that all the pieces have lined up properly to make that one work. The casting choices, the director, the writer, you know, the music, everything is going to be good. And audiences, I think, are going to be, well, they're going to be salivating for Black Panther, because it just, I mean, the introduction we had to the character in Captain America Civil War was stellar.
I'm sure.
And so knowing that he's getting his own property and getting it done right is a very welcome, you know, positive.
Blake, I'm sure that's going to be built into the trailers, that audiences are salivating for Black Panther. WGN Live Allstate Showcase Studio. Nick DiGilio, Dane in for Nick until 5 a.m. Dino Tiberi, the nephew of Larry from Aurora. We're like a tribute band.
Well, there you go.
Because they're in the booth spinning the hits.
There's nothing wrong with that. I'm proud to be his nephew. And, you know, it's my uncle was a big movie buff, too. He really enjoyed watching various movies.
What was Larry from Aurora's favorite superhero?
You know what? That's a good question, because I don't really remember watching.
Would have been one of the wrestling stars of the AWA?
Probably more so than one of the, or maybe the original Superman. I don't know. I'm not sure.
George Reeves.
Yeah, but his, the black and white Superman. I'm not sure. I think that might have been it.
Yeah. Before we go to the next break or somewhere in there, for Esmeralda and for Vic, we're going to want to get their favorite superhero of all time. Maybe the one that they wanted to dress up for Halloween, or maybe if you had some action figures, right? You know, our action figure when it comes to talking about the movies is Blake Stubbs. Blake, welcome back to WGN. What was your favorite superhero? Did you have one?
Oh, that's a tough one. It's a tough one. That's like asking me what my favorite movie is, although I'll give you an answer. For me, it was probably Batman. Growing up, because I was about 4 years old when Michael Keaton's Batman hit the big screen, and I did, you know, grow up seeing Adam West on reruns. So, I mean, Batman was always there from, like, the very beginning, and it's hard for me to disassociate, you know, my favorite with the one that I've known the longest. So I would definitely have to say Batman.
Yeah, and Batman used, you know, he had the code of the cerebral. You know, he was very smart, right? He would kind of outsmart some of his his foes. You know, he had the utility belt. He had a big bank account, too, right? Because he was a
millionaire Bruce Wayne, right?
Yes,
yeah.
Exactly. Well, coming up, we've talked with 17. I cannot believe it. 17 Marvel movies have happened, and that is amazing. I don't know how many Star Wars movies have there been. You know, they should never stop making them, because they're always interested. They've got a fan base. It's built in as far as support that is for those movies. You know, there's fans of all the different kind of incarnations of it, and they have been so different. You've seen some of those originals to the ones we have now, to some of the, you know, the Jar Jar Binks era, you know, where you had kind of, you know, different movies in the Star Wars world. But as people anticipate this one and they've kind of mapped out these episodes, what's coming up and what do you foresee?
Well, here's the thing. So the guy who's directing this also wrote it, Rian Johnson, who's known from specifically known from Looper and Brick. Those are two films of his that have very big audiences and are, you know, very well made films. The big thing is Disney has so much confidence in this young man that he's going to be developing his own Star Wars trilogy outside of The Last Jedi, which is the film coming up here, released in less than a month. So when you say, you know, they should never stop making them, I don't think they're going to. They're going to have the anthology films. They started with Rogue One. Up next, the next anthology film is going to be the Han Solo film, which, you know, had a big director change, but they did it early enough where now it seems like it's going to be okay. The big thing, though, is whatever this new trilogy is going to be, that's up in the air. And I knowing who it's in the hands of, who Disney has instilled their confidence in, I'm a big Rian Johnson fan. I'm eager to see where that goes. And I love the Star Wars universe. I don't just love these, you know, the Star Wars characters that we know in the trilogy. Now, I would always argue I'm a purist, and, you know, the prequel films, I try to ignore them because they're just not my flavor. But to be quite honest with you, if the prequel trilogy are the types of films that, you know, get young people involved and they love Star Wars, I'm all for it. And I think that, you know, there's plenty of storytelling that can be done in a galaxy far, far away.
So what do you think is going to happen with this one? Is this one going to be as well received? I know on the special effects side, and we've had kind of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the mustache worthy, you know, during this conversation, but they have done some amazing things, you know, in order to bring back some of those stars from the past, or bring back the past of the stars into the future. And
yeah.
I know that the last time we had talked, you said they weren't going to do as much of that coming up, but
right.
But what are you seeing?
This one, to be quite honest, look, we're still a month away, and part of this is going to be me speaking, not just from, you know, trying to talk about a movie that isn't out yet, but all, you know, as a critic or someone who loves talking about the industry, but also as a fan. I think this film is going to be huge in a positive way, and I think that it's a chance where they made The Force Awakens, and The Force Awakens had to really just bring Star Wars back to the forefront, okay? And a lot of people, you know, didn't love it because of the fact that it felt like it was telling A New Hope all over again. From all that I've seen, and I've tried to watch every trailer without having it ruin my experience ahead of time, from knowing, reading Rian Johnson, you know, interviews, tweets, you know, because he's a very active person on Twitter, this is going to not necessarily be an homage, but this is going to be a big step forward. And if your phrasing early on is a big step forward, I think that this is going to be a film, given that it's the second installment of this, you know, final trilogy of the original saga. Much like Empire Strikes Back, big things are going to happen in this film. There will probably be some serious tragedy. There will probably be some twists. There are definitely going to be some big stakes moves going on between what I would call, I guess, well, what we would all call now the Resistance and the First Order, because it's no longer just the Rebellion and the Empire. I think that, you know, we as an audience are going to be in for a treat. And I would be very surprised if this film does anything other than deliver what it's supposed to. And I would say that because Disney has now given a whole trilogy to Rian Johnson to do, you know, pretty much what he wants to do. He's proven himself, and they've got confidence in his abilities.
When you look at this, and this is something that started, what was it, like 1977 when the first one came out, or something,
yes,
along those lines.
Yes.
And so you've got multiple generations that are able to get into it, and it has followed a bunch of different formats, different characters, sort of a central theme that you could kind of tie yourself to. But the movies have been very different, and they have all found their fan base. Is it to the point now, Blake, do you think that no matter, you know, and they're in good hands, right? They have people that have,
sure,
grown up,
yeah,
on the movies. You don't get a director in there that just doesn't get it, you know, has his own vision, and it's just not,
right,
what's going on. Everybody has grown up with it. Is that they really can't do, I don't want to say can't, but they really aren't going to do anything wrong. So even if it is totally different, fans will see it as kind of new and refreshing. Whereas those first movies that they made after the original three, there was a lot of risks of, are you going to do it right?
Right. And the big thing, too, was that, you know, this is in the hands of an entity that wants its properties to succeed and be something that fans truly enjoy. And now, look, I'm not going to say that that was not George Lucas's intent when he made the prequel films, you know, because, again, they're not really held in the regard that the original trilogy that he made on the same level. The thing with those films was that, you know, those were entirely funded by him. They were made sort of in isolation. They were only under his purview and what he wanted to do. And in the end, it's like, well, maybe there should have been a little different approach, a big different approach to what would have made these films succeed. And, you know, again, I just sort of said Justice League isn't very good, but there were things that I liked about it. You know, Ewan McGregor's Obi-Wan Kenobi, if Disney announced tomorrow that they're going to make a Kenobi film, he's the right age, he's ready to go, and he definitely has the demeanor and the character. I would be 100% on board for that, especially under the Disney label. And this is one of those things where I, you know, a lot of people were worried when Disney bought this property. They weren't quite sure it was going to work out, but I figured it was going to be either really great or really bad, and I'm glad that it was really great.
We knew they'd make a theme park. We knew that there would be an endless supply of lunchboxes and action figures. We knew they would get that part of it right. Yep. It looks as though on the movie side, they're doing that right as well. And Obi-Wan Kenobi is a hero, right? And people have kind of weighed in with that. And also Underdog, someone kind of weighed in that Underdog was one of their heroes. And then also, too, 38 states in Canada, the signal for WGN is very vast at this time of day. And Keith in Kansas has weighed in support of the Justice League. And so we'll talk about that. See, you talk violin, there's some aggressive violin. At 720 WGN, Nick DiGilio Show, Daniel in until 5, along with Dino Tiberi here, the nephew of Larry from Aurora, the physical embodiment. And we're talking superheroes. We're going to talk with Blake Stubbs, Blockbuster Blake, in just a second. Esmeralda, what is your, did you have a favorite superhero, or, you know, or was it just, a, you know, some maybe someone in your life could be your, did you have an uncle that was maybe a superhero to you, or did you have a someone in a costume?
Oh, I'm going to go straight up with a costume. I have found a newfound love for Wonder Woman. I wasn't too into it as a kid, but watching that first Wonder Woman movie, that was amazing.
It was so good. Like, my daughters absolutely loved it. My wife absolutely loved it. Well, my wife cries in almost everything, even like after school specials. She's just a softie, and so she cries, but she just thought it was just so great, right? Everybody is loving that movie.
Oh, for sure. No, I definitely cried I teared up in the beginning just watching, like, just a bunch of amazing women fighting and just being, like, strong figures for little girls and for just women in general. It was very emotional.
Yep, empowering. All right, thanks, Esmeralda. We'll get Vic Vaughn. Maybe he's got thoughts on that as well before the end of the show. But someone from the 773 said Zorro, and not Esteban, the infomercial late-night guitar salesman, who also is Zorro would have kicked the superheroes' butts, and he says he's got a true story. And then the men and women of the U.S. Marines are also our superheroes in real life, of course.
No doubt about that.
That is true. And Blake Stubbs on the line, our superhero when it comes to talking movies. So that was one of the upsides, right, is that Wonder Woman did kind of, I mean, a lot of ladies, girls, they just love it. It's a super empowering film. Other than being entertaining, right?
Absolutely. No, this Wonder Woman was a film that I left the theater, and I just wanted to talk about it with everybody. And I'm not the only one. It was a film that definitely, I think, showed all of the best parts of what being a hero is all about. I don't think that it left any of that, you know, by the wayside as well. Because, you know, the character of Diana Prince, Wonder Woman, was sort of really coming into her own. So when you think about it as a coming of age story, considering that, you know, she's not, you know, young the way we think of people being young, she's young compared to her contemporaries and who she grew up around and who raised her, and coming to terms also with, you know, what she is. It sort of answered all the big questions, you know, the who, what, where, when, and why. And so when you left that film, it was like, okay, this is a very big step in the right direction for the DC universe. Hopefully they just parlay that right into Justice League. But I think that the, you know, the wheels on the machine were already rolling for Justice League. And so, you know, when tragedy struck and then the director change happened and then the music change happened and then, you know, reshoots had to happen and it was a film that was really having an uphill battle compared to Wonder Woman, which I think was just a hit from beginning to end every level.
And it had a lot of the humor in there. It was great. Well, entertainment comes in all shapes and sizes. You know, some of it empowering and uplifting and also entertaining. Yeah. And some of it, Dino and I, in totally separate households, but we both got a chance to see a movie that we are looking forward to the sequel for is we watched Deadpool, and this is a character that I don't know if it's empowering or uplifting in any way. Certainly entertaining, a little disturbing, off-putting in many different ways as well, but undeniably entertaining. I mean, of course, if you've got to be a certain age, I had to tell little Maxwell, to leave the room a number of times. He wasn't there watching. Occasionally, he tried to sneak in and look around the side, because Deadpool is not for kids, you know, as many superheroes are.
No.
But Blake, I know you loved that movie, as did so many people in the entertainment industry. Are we going to get another one with Ryan Reynolds?
Definitely. They've actually just started putting out the official trailers and marketing with a very bizarre Bob Ross tribute, with Deadpool wearing the Afro wig and wearing the Bob Ross attire and painting pictures. I mean, again, not for kids, but definitely one of those movies that, you know, they made it for so little money and it made so much, rightfully so, because it was great.
But wait, Bob Ross, the Here's a Happy Tree. Is that what we're talking about?
Yeah. Oh, exactly that. And I say this knowing that people are either looking this up right now or you're going to look this up as soon as you get a break, because it is hilarious and bizarre and weird, but then it jumps right into an actual, like, teaser for what Deadpool 2 is going to have. But it also is smart because it doesn't spoil anything. It just shows a few clips and, you know, you get excited and now you're ready. So, you know, another thing too, and not to just totally just rail against Justice League. If people are going to go see this and have fun, that's what's really important. Okay. As a, you know, a critic, I can't necessarily say I would easily recommend it knowing that Thor Ragnarok is also playing in theaters. But at the same time, I know that the marketing for Justice League also spoiled some very big things. And so people, I think, are feeling a little let down by that, maybe. And if you went in totally blind, then you're probably having the true experience of seeing Justice League. I didn't have that luxury.
That sounds, you know, like that's what I should
do. I'm inundated with that stuff. Yeah, try to go in blind, I would say.
If you go in blind, you won't be put off by the bad CGI on the mustache, right? Is that what we're saying?
Right. Right. Yeah, basically. I mean, and to give, you know, credence to that, like, my girlfriend went to see it with me. She had no idea any of that happened. Didn't know any of it until I told her after the fact. And in the end, her response to the movie was really just, it was okay. I didn't really like it, but it was okay. Like, I'm glad I saw it, but whatever. And I'm just like, yeah, the hemming and hawing and your kind of breakdown of it is pretty true to how I feel about it. You know, like, there's things I like, but on the whole, I really didn't.
Well, so. I'm glad you've got a little more to say about it than maybe your girlfriend. You can give her kind of the tutorial on the,
yeah.
It was okay. I kind of liked it. I don't know, maybe.
Yeah.
It's all right.
And again, it's not really, like, I know she left the theater being like, I just want to watch Wonder Woman again. But you know what I mean? Like, that's how she left the movie. So I think that speaks to Wonder Woman in a really positive light.
You know what?
As
many things that may have gone wrong, enough things went right where, and there are some fans, we've got a number of people that have texted in and called in that are supporters of it. And people support the characters, because I don't know, you could do it wrong a hundred times and people are still going to line up. People that are fans of Superman, fans of Batman, that are going to come in and see what they're doing. And they'll get it right. Like you had said, Blake, is that you want to enjoy these movies. You want them to be great. And eventually they'll get there. They built in a little bit of the humor. I think that's cool. It'd be neat to see Ben Affleck.
Mm-hmm.
I appreciate his work, you know, the things that he's done over the years. Don't you, Dino?
I do.
Yeah. See, so there you go. We're holding out hope. We're gonna do this right. So, Blake, before we let you go, give the information on social media so that people can continue this conversation and many others with you on the movies.
Best way to get a hold of me is on Twitter. Follow me, at Blake Stubbs. Shoot me a DM or just tweet right at me. I love talking movies, specifically, you know, the big ones that are out right now. I know we're going to be going into Oscar season soon, so I'm really going to be excited to discuss stuff as I see it, which I'm going to be, you know, going into overdrive here very soon for all of that. So, yeah, at Blake Stubbs on Twitter.
And as people get into the holiday season, you and I are going to be in here on Black Friday to kind of give people things that they can do in between the shopping. They can duck out of the Weebolts and head into a theater and enjoy some of these movies coming up. So stay tuned for that. Blake, thanks so much, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks for having me. Always a pleasure. We'll talk to you guys soon.